Good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to Vox Pop for this Thursday, February 13th. I'm Ray Graff. Yeah, you know, weather is kind of shaky, but can you smell that? It's my aqua velva. No, it's spring. It's coming. It'll be a month or so, and then there you go. Gardening today, we'll welcome Fred Breglia of Landis Arboretum and Bob Graves of Fatigan's Nursery. You got a gardening question? It's time. Give us a call, 800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551, or email your gardening questions to voxpop@wamc.org. The dynamic duo, Fred Breglia and Bob Graves, are here to answer your questions. We'll dig in right after the news. Hello again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. It's gardening today, and we welcome back Bob Graves, co-owner of Fatigan's Nursery in Latham, New York, and Fred Breglia, a director of the Landis Arboretum in Esperance, New York. He's the director, as a matter of fact. Greg Ward and Dale Isla Riggs were scratched from our card today, but we have two gardening experts in here to, make sure that you're going in the right direction this spring, and spring is on the way. Number is 800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551 if you have a gardening question, or you can email us at voxpop@wamc.org, voxpop@wamc.org for the email, or 800-348-2551 for the telephone. Fred Breglia, Bob Graves, how are you guys doing?
Good. Good to be here. Thanks for having us.
Yeah, right? I'm glad we could make it today.
I haven't been outside since 6:30 in the morning, but how are the roads?
Yeah, the commute was not bad for me.
It's just raining.
Yeah?
Yeah, once I got out of Esperance, it was that area was a little bit sloppy, but once I got to 88,
out there, I think.
88 clear, 90 even better.
So beautiful.
Made it maybe a few minutes. Took me a few minutes longer than normal, so not bad at all.
Yeah, all right. Well, anything you guys want to touch upon before we get to the emails? We already have a stack here, and then we'll go to the phones.
This time of year always reminds me that plants don't respond to the absolute day length. They respond to whether days are getting longer or shorter. So in the fall, plants start to go to sleep because even your house plants get quiet.
Yeah.
They know that the days are getting shorter, but right now the days have gotten long enough that things are beginning to wake up just a little bit, particularly houseplants and the like.
Interesting.
So they might need a little fertilizer. You can start to think about repotting maybe because they're aware.
Mm.
Yep, and those houseplants, you can also keep a good eye right now for insects, because if you had some in there at this point in the game, you'd start to really see some infestations. Take a good look.
Yeah, as soon as you bring them in, the predators that were outside are gone because you brought them in. So insects multiply inside when you bring in plants from outside because there are no predators there.
Right.
Yeah, and these insects are really small. Most of the insects that attack plants are really, really tiny. A magnifying glass helps, hand lens. Sometimes you see the symptoms on the leaves before you see the insects.
Especially spider mite.
Yep.
So small.
A lot of people, they might have scale. Not all insects run around when you shake the tree or shake the plant. Scale just sits there. It looks kind of like almost a lot of people think it's part of the bark.
Looks like a wart almost.
Almost like a wart, yep.
And
so,
usually gives that away is the plants start to get sticky.
Exactly.
Because the excretion of the insect falls on the leaves and they get sticky. And then sometimes they get black because you get sooty mold that grows on the excretion of the insect.
Yep, and you'll see yellow in leaves that go along with it.
This is all more than you wanted to know.
No, it's fine. Listen, I'm going to nip out for a drink.
You later.
It's fine.
We got it.
I had a question about cold, and I was watching. I was out in a walk, standing, looking at the backyard, and it's been covered in snow. I mean, we haven't had vast storms, but it hasn't melted. There has been snow cover for several weeks now, and during some of that time, it was very, very cold.
It was.
Does the snow help things like lawns?
Absolutely.
And some of, it does. It keeps
Absolutely.
It insulates.
It's a great insulator.
Snow is an insulator. You'd be surprised if there's no snow, the frost will go much deeper in the ground than if there is snow. Even if it's not, like what have we got? Maybe 3-4 inches in some places.
We've got a foot at the Arboretum
right
foot.
Now.
Solid foot on the ground. Three foot in the Caroga Lake area.
Now,
on the ground.
Then can we suggest that it will be a more verdant and lovely spring and summer?
You don't know yet.
you know, a lot of times when we get right close to that spring, those are the times when things can really go wrong, because you think of, well, apples, it's a big one for New York. Yep. And those think of the tissue that develops on an apple blossom. It's so thin. And if it gets cold when an apple blossom comes out, that tissue could be damaged. And
late February and March are usually times you see the most damage, because that's when it can get really warm. Maybe 60, and then go down to 10.
Yeah,
in and a
it's
day
those,
or two.
It's yeah. those fluctuations That's that gets
the fluctuations
us.
Fluctuations is what yep. hurts.
But
stuff.
That insulating snow right now
right
we're
now
shaping up for pretty good, yeah. and the fact that it's been cold and we've had snow definitely is helping plants out.
Should minimize the losses.
All right,
absolutely.
This email from Diane came in very early this morning, and you know the rule, Diane. We generally don't send pictures, but you sent a bunch of. They're beautiful. Diane's. Note says, after researching, I saved one of the flower stalks from last year's clivia bloom.
Mm-hmm.
I'm at the point to remove the seeds and start the growing process, but it sounds very tricky for actual long-term success. Do you think starting clivia from seed is worth the effort? And there's some lovely pictures. You can pass them around. 800-348-2551. So what do you think?
Well, what you have to do with things like that is you have to look up the procedure for propagation on a plant, because what kind of treatment those seeds need varies from plant to plant. So
yeah.
you look up clivia propagation growing from seed, and it'll tell you if there's any specific conditions that those seeds have to go through before you try to grow them.
Aha.
Yep.
Yeah, so it's often exactly very much specific for each plant.
It's plant.
Yeah,
it can
is.
Be for things that are in cold and, weather climates. It can be the certain number of weeks, at certain number of degrees.
Yep.
And for other things which are tropical, of course, that's not the case.
That's right. But you know, speaking of seeds, this is a good time of year to start checking your seeds for this coming year. It's not a really good time to plant a lot of seeds.
How do you
yet.
Check them? What are you looking for?
So good question. What you want to do now is basically get some of your seeds that you had for a year, a few years, 3 years. Get a paper towel, moisten it, put your maybe 8-10 seeds in that paper towel. Keep that paper towel warm and moist. You're gonna see some kind of germination occurring, or you should. And if you see less than half of your seeds germinating, consider buying some new seeds.
That's very interesting.
The last thing you want to do is get to the point where, okay, it's time to plant. You put your seeds, and that'll set you back a few weeks if they don't germinate. So these are things you can do this time of year.
All right. This is from Mark in Albany. I'd like to start onion seedlings soon in my basement and transfer them to my garden. When should I plant them? How many seeds do I put in each small container? When do I bring them outside?
So another good one. Actually, timing-wise, he's perfect. Leeks, onions, right now. It'd be a good time, because you're going to plant those guys out in April. Depending on the weather, could be early April or mid-April. But, you know, starting leeks, onions, really good right now. Mm. Also, if you want a challenge, try celery. It's a little bit harder.
Why
but
is it
it's,
harder?
Just a little bit harder to plant to grow. But this time of year, again, is a good time to start that as well.
I never bothered much with celery because you don't really get that much.
Exactly. I don't usually
do
too much with it.
A lot of effort for what you get.
My wife has done celery, though, and it has done well.
It's doable.
But, so it is doable, but it's a little bit more challenging. But leeks, onions, I love leeks. This is a great time to do them.
Are onions tough?
No, they just take along. And the same as leeks,
slow.
They're not really hard.
Yeah.
They just take a while, and you plant them early. So, you know, a lot of times you plant them in, like I said, April. Sometimes early to mid-April, and so you're going to want to start those guys
little
now.
Little bottom heat helps with a lot of the seedlings, so that you either have a heat mat or someplace you can set them so that it's a little warm.
Yep, I usually use a heat mat.
Heat mat.
Easy.
Huh.
It's very low electric, but it keeps it at that, you know, right temperature.
70-ish.
Yep, keeps those.
It's funny, you know, I've never seen anyone have onions in their garden around town. My father was a great gardener. He never grew them. My wife's a great gardener. She never grew them. I wonder why.
You can grow onions.
They're around, yeah. My dad always grew them. He grew, my wife does both onions and leeks. Leeks, like I said,
any of the root crops
good.
Like that
they do
a little better if you've got a nice, loose soil.
Mm.
Like Western New York, Southwestern New York, has great onion soil.
Yeah.
Around here, you know, if you got heavy clay, it's a little tougher.
Yeah,
you
we
need
do
to
have
loosen
that
it up.
At my house, yeah.
Yeah.
And we start them in little six-packs. I think part of that question that guy had was where. But you know, little six-packs and... You know, again, if you test your seed before you start them, you know they're viable, then you don't need too many per cell. You know, you could put one or two in there.
And you usually put more than one, and then you can thin out.
That's what I usually do, too. At least a couple, and then, you know, okay, they're sprouting.
There's weaker ones. You just take them out.
Take them out, leave it down to one strong one.
So what you're saying is I need plenty of six-packs when I garden.
Well, you know, it's recommended, right?
Right, okay. Fair enough.
Urban doesn't come in six-packs.
Well, it depends. Maybe we ought to tell
we'll
you about
do that. Yeah, here we go.
We'll talk off air about that.
Nick writes in, I found a few daffodil bulbs that never made it into the yard last year. Can I put them in soil inside, leave them in the freezer, then bring them outside in a pot to join the rest when it gets nice out?
Yes, but okay. I forget how many weeks. Is it 12 maybe weeks of cold that they need? I'd be more inclined to put them in the refrigerator than in the freezer.
Why do they need cold?
They grow their roots in the wintertime.
In the cold?
In the cold.
Even if it's freezing out.
So what we used to do, we used to grow a lot of them for commercial sale, and we have a cooler. You walk in like a meat cooler.
Yeah.
You'd pot them up, you'd put them in there, and you'd leave them at a certain temperature for a certain number of weeks. So, yes, you can plant them now, but it's getting awful late to be able to get that amount of cold.
Huh. All right. This one now, listen, we're not soliciting business here, so you got to be careful how you answer this one. Mona and Joseph in Bern, New York said, we are tired of being ripped off by overseas bulb catalog companies that sell many exotic and fancy bulbs. We like to buy local, and we seek your guidance. We're especially interested in spring blooming bulbs.
Well, your spring blooming bulbs, you're a little late.
Yep, you plant them in the fall.
Plant them in the fall. You don't, because daffodils, crocus, tulips, hyacinths are the primary ones.
Yep.
That's done in the fall, before it gets cold.
Okay.
So you really want to wait for the fall to look for those guys. But how do you find a good source? You know, a lot of the garden shops almost all of them have those varieties, so it shouldn't be hard to find.
Depending upon how fussy you are, you know, more exotic, newer, patented varieties are going to cost more than, you know, daffodils. There's a gazillion different types, for example, and some of them are standard ones that have been around for years.
Yep.
And it depends on what you're looking for.
Yep. And, you know, certain specialty growers, there are a lot of specialty growers in the Northeast. You know, I think an internet search on, you know, where they are and what they grow.
Sure.
Would probably yield some pretty good results.
A lot of it's on the West Coast, too.
A lot of it is.
Oregon, Washington, yep. So it's not all foreign.
That's right.
A great number of bulbs, of course, are grown in Holland.
Right.
Huge
still,
amount.
To this day.
Oh, still.
Oh, yeah. Huge.
Extremely so. Huge. Yes.
Yeah, pictures of, you know, huge fields, like, you know, wouldn't believe it, like the Midwest,
a little country, but it has such a huge impact.
Amazing.
It really does. Major, major
thing.
Horticulture.
All right, let's take a break. It's Gardening Today. Fred Breglia and Bob Graves are here to answer your questions at 800-348-2551. We'll hit the phones in a moment. The Levin Brothers, Tony and Pete, 800-348-2551. Yep, Gardening Today with Fred Breglia and Bob Graves. Greg Ward and Dale Isle Riggs are out and about today, and we'll be back next time. Well, I guess we're back on our regular schedule again, huh?
And that is what?
Well, you don't get the emails.
We'll keep you posted.
I think I get the emails. Question is, do I look at the emails?
Well, one in February, and then starting March in the warm weather, we go twice a month until about October, right?
That's correct.
That?
Have you ever done this show?
There's going to be a quiz at the end of the show.
Yeah,
for you,
I'm getting
Bob.
Older. I don't remember things.
I'm with you there, brother. All right, let's go to the phone. Sally's in Hinsdale. Sally, you're on.
Hi.
Hi.
I'm so excited to talk to you guys.
Welcome.
My thing is garlic. I plant garlic every year, and every year I get these teeny tiny cloves, maybe four of them on each bulb. And I amend the soil pretty much every year. I have chickens, so I use that. I don't know what's wrong. What am I doing wrong?
Yep. So I grow a lot of garlic every year. I take pride in my garlic. I can't seem to eat enough garlic as it is. So
me too.
And we get really big bulbs. So these are some of the things that I've done that have sort of proven to be successful year in, year out consistently. First off, you're going to need to get a good source for your garlic. So, you know, getting it from the supermarket, I'm not sure if you're doing that. That's not generally a good source. So you want to get it from a garlic grower, someone that, you know, local, ideally, because it's more geared toward your conditions. But it could be, you know, it could be ordered then or whatever. But the main thing is get, you know, good quality garlic, cloves, and then you want to plant big cloves. Bigger cloves equal bigger garlic bulbs. Uh-huh. So if you plant the small one, so I always say when we grow our garlic, I go through and, you know, the best, biggest cloves, take those right away. And then all the other ones, which are still good size because you have good size bulbs, we use for the cooking and everything else. And then so, and you want to make sure your spacing is right, generally about maybe 4 inches or 5 inches apart. And you want to make sure your rows are about maybe 8 inches apart or so. And I plant them about, you always want to plant in the fall for bigger bulbs. You know, you can plant garlic in the spring, but you're going to get a smaller bulb. You did say you did incorporate a lot of organics into the soil, which is great. So that's, you know, they like good organic rich soil. And, you know, so that's key. I plant them generally, you know, and this will vary a little bit, but I plant them basically a finger length deep, which is, you know, my finger's probably somewhere around 4 or 5, 4.5 inches or something like that. Okay. So you're planting them about that deep. You do want to put a good layer of, I use straw for a mulch. That definitely helps with weed competition. Weeds are going to definitely compete with the bulbs for size and nutrients. So if they're competing with nutrients, they're going to yield the smaller bulb. So you got to be pretty diligent. And then I like to put at least a solid inch of straw down around those. And I am pretty diligent about getting out there and getting those weeds out. And watering, make sure that, you know, you water them during the drought.
Bob. I would just mention that she said she uses chicken manure. Chicken manure is really hot.
It's really hot.
It's got a lot of nitrogen. So I'd almost be thinking about getting a soil test to make sure your nitrogen levels aren't too high. It seems counterintuitive, but sometimes you get too much nitrogen, things don't grow as well.
It'll put more leafy growth and less growth to the bulb. Now, chicken manure is really good if you let it compost and rot. So if it's really aged out chicken manure, then you're going to be in pretty good shape. But if it's not been broken down for a while and turn into like almost more soil than anything else, it looks more like black soil. Then, you know, it might be very much like Bob said, it could be too hot and putting out too much nitrogen. Always a soil test is recommended too. You know, what are my fertility, you know?
I do that. I will make a compost pile of the manure and leaves. And it makes a nice soil, and I'll put that in the garden.
Get a soil test, though, because you don't know your pH either.
And in New York, we have one of the best, you know, universities out there, in my opinion, Cornell University. And you can send a soil test, a fertility test, out to Cornell University. You can go to your local cooperative extension, and they'll send it out for you. They won't test it. They won't be able to do the test there, but they'll send that sample out. And you can specify right on that sample what you're trying to grow. Like you could say garlic or a handful of other crops. And it'll come back with everything it has, and it'll even tell you what you need to do to recommend to fix it.
Sally, thanks a lot for the call. You guys ever grow elephant garlic? I know it's not really garlic. But
I have.
Tony Carlotto, we do a garlic show, and last time he was on, that stuff's delicious. You ever try the elephant?
I have. It's a real mild garlic, but it's a really good garlic. The one that I grow is called Music, and it's a really big. I mean, sometimes the one clove will fill my. It's almost, people think it's sometimes elephant garlic. It's that big, but it's a real garlic and a really good taste. Boy, oh boy, forget about it.
By the way, one last question based on our last caller: chicken manure. In this time of the avian flu, is there any chance that the avian flu passes through the chicken into the manure? Are you doing harm by putting it out there in your compost pile?
I don't know that we're qualified to answer that.
It might be a good question for the science forum.
Okay.
But once you compost something, the idea with composting is it gets hot, and generally that'll kill.
Okay. Yep.
And I tend to think if it's thoroughly composted, my feeling would be that it would be probably pretty safe.
Okay.
You know, once things are thoroughly composted, which takes a while.
I imagine we have a biologist or an epidemiologist who will call in here anytime. Let's go to Joanna in South Hadley, Massachusetts. Joanna, you're on.
Hi there. Hi. I have one front yard question and one backyard question.
10-4.
Front yard question. I'm really changing over my front yard gardens to be all native plants. But I have one big patch of Pachysandra and one big long patch of myrtle.
Yep.
I want to know your thoughts about if I should be trying to get rid of those things or if I should just interplant other plants among them, or what's the idea there? And then the second question, a third of my backyard I've let grow up into goldenrod and asters for 2 years, and I haven't mowed it at all. So all the sticks are there. That's good for the insects. Is there any advice about whether I should cut it down partway or all the way, and when in the spring should I do that, or just leave the sticks there and let the asters and goldenrod come up on their own?
There's a couple answers. I would cut it down in the spring. It's good to leave it there mm-hmm. over the winter because you get a lot of the good insects that overwinter on it. But there's no reason to not cut it down and allow it to regrow, because if you don't cut things down, after a while it turns to brushland. You have to mow it occasionally, and that can happen really quick.
Yeah, the woody plants will want to come in.
Woody plants will take it over. Now, in terms of the pachysandra and the myrtle, you can contain those very easily. I mean, I've got pachysandra and myrtle in my flower beds. Now, if you take it out and throw it out in a wild area, it's going to go off on its own. But if it's in a contained bed, and you can plant in amongst it very easily, you know, you can dig a hole there and pop some other things in. It does take some effort to get rid of it if you want it gone. That's not easy.
No, I'm not necessarily thinking. It's just that neither of those two things are listed as native plants. So I don't know if it's...
Yeah, they're not native. Yeah, okay. And they are considered invasive in some areas. I've seen it growing wild in the woods because somebody just threw it out there. In a contained bed.
Well, these are both in contained areas.
Yeah, I wouldn't worry about it being invasive, but go ahead and plant stuff in it if you want to. That'd be fine.
I concur. It's, what you're doing, it sounds, is really good. You're obviously pushing towards, natives and pollination and pollinators. And, I think, personally, I would say, mixing in natives and amongst pachysandra and vinca, it's real easy to cut a little circle out. Put your plants in. It looks good too. It's attractive, and you're still doing a real lot towards the goal, which is getting more natives in and helping pollinators. A lot of people overlook the trees. The trees, they have flowers, and they're also awesome for pollinators. So there's so much pollinators that use the trees and the flowers on those. Mm-hmm. And then what Bob said in the backyard, as long as I recommend cutting it back, but just later spring, not so early, so that those insects that are overwintering have time to come out. And then at that point, you could probably cut it back every other year, and you'd get rid of the woody plants that way. We at the Arboretum, in areas where we promote a lot of goldenrod, and that's a good one. Goldenrod's a really good pollinator plant because it's good for such a wide variety. It's not just specific to a few insects. So many different insects use it, and goldenrod honey is really great too when the bees pollinate.
No kidding, really?
Oh, it's really good. Really
good.
All
right, Joanna, thanks for the call.
Good job.
Goldenrod honey? Really?
Yep. It's one of those plants that bees collect a lot of pollen from, and it makes a really sweet honey.
Huh. And what did you say, the Japanese knotweed honey, too?
Japanese knotweed. I was just going to say, people grow that just for honey. It's a horribly invasive plant.
Yeah.
Yep. It is horribly invasive. But
I've got some growing on a hedgerow by me, and I keep mowed around it so it doesn't go anywhere. But when it's in flower... My Lord, the bees on it.
Oh, they do like it.
They really like it, and it does make a really sweet honey. Yeah. So if there was something to be said about an invasive, there was something good to be said about an invasive, at least this one is used by a lot of insects.
I'll tell you, those things are tough. We've been fighting a 20-plus year battle against those things.
This stuff will come up through concrete.
It's amazing.
It's amazing.
Blacktop.
All right, let's go. By the way, the number here is 800-348-2551 if you have a gardening question. 800-348-2551. Email is voxpop@wamc.org, and we'll check the email bag in a little bit. Robin's in Hudson. Robin, go ahead.
Hi. I have a question about an African violet. It's the one plant my daughter's cats won't eat, and I've been able to rebloom them very successfully. But when I was lifting them to bottom water them the other day, I snapped the neck. Ouch. Is there any hope for it?
Yeah, African violets can be propagated. You use leaf cuttings or stem cuttings, and take those and set them on a pot with some maybe a sand and peat mix, something lightweight, or a African violet mix for that matter. They like a highly organic soil. Yeah, it's slow and it's laborious and it takes time, but you can rejuvenate that. African violets, actually, the original mother plant, don't last all that long. You need to propagate them and rejuvenate them.
No, mine are probably getting into their senior years then.
Yeah. time to get some pups going.
Okay. Well, Robin.
All right.
Thanks for the call. 800-348-2551 Gardening Today with Bob Graves and Fred Breglia. How are things over at the Fadigans?
Hey, I was going to tell you, next week, trees. Yeah.
Trees?
Trees are coming.
You've had them before, though, right?
No, I mean for the new load for this year.
Oh, really?
In. Yeah.
Christmas trees?
No.
Oh, okay.
Fruit trees.
All right. You know, when you get your Christmas, you guys do Christmas trees.
Oh, yeah.
I think we actually, how long's Fadigans been in business?
105 years.
Okay, so I think when I was a kid, we went to Fadigans once and got Christmas trees.
You might have.
So, they come from Canada?
Come from all over. We get some from Oregon, Washington. We get some from Canada. We get some from Pennsylvania, from the Virginia, Tennessee area.
The timing's not good for this question, and no one gives a rat's behind. But I want to know, in your estimation, Bob Graves from Fadigan's Nursery, what's the longest-lasting Christmas tree once you cut it and put it in your house?
I think generally regarded as the Fraser fir.
Yeah, that's what we do.
Spruces, no. Pines, no. You know, it used to be years ago we sold Scotch pine.
I remember that
Christmas
being
trees.
Sold around the area.
They're terrible.
Yep.
And spruces are awful.
Yeah.
Balsam are pretty good. Fraser fir. There are some other types of exotic firs.
The first time, now, I'm not going to say where I got it. We got a very nice Christmas tree at a local place. And the first time ever I saw a little jar on the counter when I was paying. And, you know, I kind of stay away from that. But, of course, I'm Mr. Curious. I got to buy it. Oh, yeah, you put a little of this in the water and it makes the life go. It dried it right up. It was total snake oil. I asked the guy. I said, hey, listen, you sure that's not going to just stop up everything? Oh, no, this is okay.
Yeah, I don't think that was the problem.
I don't think that was the problem either.
No. Those materials don't necessarily do great things, but what usually happens if you don't do a fresh cut
that's what I was
and get
say.
It in water right away in some warm water, the vessels actually close up.
Yeah.
They just get a tacky, sticky sap.
It's not our first rodeo. I mean, we had trees every year.
I'll tell you, we've been selling trees for decades. And every year, out of 1,000 trees or so, you'll have a couple come back that dried up.
Yeah.
Every year.
Did you say operator error?
It's just, you know. Oh, no. But it always happens. Yep. There's a few.
Some of it depends on when the tree was actually cut out in the field, too.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it looks fresh. It looks green. But how long ago was it cut before it got to your shop?
Yeah.
And
they don't cut them all the week before you get them.
Right. So that's why, you know, they're just, you know, so a big part of it is how long was it cut? And if it's a fresh cut tree, then you make a new fresh cut on it, you're going to end up with a tree that's going to last a lot longer. If it's been sitting around for 3 weeks, a month.
Well, while my wife was sticking the knife in for me buying this stuff, she said, she did tell me a hilarious story about her mom who, you know, probably McCall's or Red Book or something in the 70s. She read something and said, whoa, hang on there. Somebody's on the line. Okay, hang on, Gloria. So my wife's mom said, I read that if you put Coca-Cola in there, it'll definitely make everything last. And the thing dropped, just needles so immediately.
Some people say corn syrup, sugar, Coke.
It's a bad plan, right?
There is some research. I mean, we got a caller on the line, but like with cut flowers, since it is Valentine's Day coming up.
Oh, yeah, that's
fresh
true.
Cuts
that's
on flowers is also definitely recommended. And, you know, diagonal cuts are better than
flat cuts. With
the fresh
cut on
too.
Flowers, they say to make the cut in the water.
That's right.
Because it collects it so quick.
How are you going to do that?
You just hold a pot of water.
How you get your hand in the pot?
You use a pair of pruners. You use a bigger kitchen pot.
I can't figure this
you
out.
Could also run the, you could also run the faucet, kind of put it under the faucet. But a diagonal cut is better than a flat cut. Because if you think of the vase, the flat cut sits at the bottom of the vase, and it actually prevents the water. So the diagonal cut
it's more than
helps
you wanted
bring
to
it
know,
up.
I'm sure.
All right. Well, we went from Christmas to Valentine's,
there we
which
go.
Is much
there
more
go.
Appropriate. All right. Gloria in Monterey, you're not first. But somehow, miraculously, nobody touched anything, and you're on the air. So you might as well go ahead.
Okay, goody. I would like to know, because we have profusion of ticks each year, the ticks are getting worse. And I have a commercial sprayer who comes and sprays, and I'm sure it affects my lilac bushes and dahlia's growth. How do you coordinate getting rid of the ticks and having your plants grow nicely so that they're not subjugated to the spray,
So that's
the commercial spraying.
That's a really, you know, ticks are a really big concern. They are getting worse and worse. The you know, it's not just Lyme's disease. It's a whole bunch of tick-borne diseases, things that they can get you, infections, bacteria, on and on. So, you know, we don't spray or anything like that at Landis Arboretum or at our home. But what we do try to do is ticks don't like really short grass and really, you know, mowed areas as much as they like brushy areas. So we try to keep the brushy areas and the more wilder stuff back away from our yards.
Interesting. Okay.
We try to just keep it, you know, neat and tidy as best we can.
The other thing here is if you've got somebody treating your shrubs for problems, what you need for ticks is, if you're going to do it, is an insecticide. It's not a weed killer.
Right.
It's not going to have any effect on your plants.
Yep.
And there are relatively safe, even some organic forms, some oils and the like that you can use.
Yep.
I know a lot of people in country areas, chickens.
Yeah.
Chickens are really good.
Get an army of possums.
Possums are one of the number one.
Front step last night.
Really?
Wow, cool.
Out wandering around now.
Yep, cool animal. Uh-oh. They actually get more ticks than probably any wild animal out there. They actually purposely roll around in the leaf litter so that they get infested with ticks, and then they, like a cat, they'll sit there and groom themselves and get all the ticks.
Now we need a rent-a-possum business.
Bob Graves rent-a-possum. Call 1-800-RENT-A-POSSUM. All right, listen, let's take a break here. Gloria, that was fabulous. 800-348-2551. Okay, it's gardening. We'll be back. John Coltrane, like Sonny, here on Vox Pop, 800-348-2551. It's the gardening show. Fred Breglia and Bob Graves. Fred, I didn't know that the possums are marsupials. They have pouches.
They do. Yeah. They're the only marsupial in, I believe, in the United States.
Amazing.
Anyways.
And I looked it up the other night because I was surprised to see this possum. They have a prehensile tail, so when they're building their nest, they go out and gather grasses, dried grasses, and they carry it with their tail.
No way.
Wow. Yeah.
Yep. And sometimes the little babies will even carry like on their backs.
On
and
their
stuff.
Back.
Yeah, they'll carry them around on their backs and stuff.
All right. I've learned everything I want to know about
possums. Yeah,
that's
enough.
Andrew and Rhinebeck, I live in a townhouse with only a small backyard, so I can only use pots. I'm getting tired of just growing tomatoes and peppers. Do you have any suggestions for other veggies?
Oh, gosh.
You can grow a lot.
A lot of things. You know, maybe not root crops so much, but lettuces and beans and peas. I don't know that I'd do carrots or things like that.
No, you could even go to trellis, do cucumbers.
Cucumbers.
Yep.
And they're coming out more and more with smaller plants for pots.
Yep. Mm.
You know, even like in the cucumbers, bush types or things that are, you know, you don't want to do squash that are going to take up 5 feet of space.
Yeah.
Yep. I mean, you can grow potatoes in buckets.
Actually,
grow really well in buckets. So,
really?
Yeah. And, you know, you got to think about what that cultural requirement is of that plant. So if it's like a full sun plant, you may not have all these containers all in the same area. You might move the shadier ones, part sun, part shade ones, to different areas of your lawn. But if you're willing to move containers around, I would say you probably could grow a pretty much a pretty good garden with just containers.
Chantal writes in, my house plants are in terrible shape right now. We have a fireplace and forced air heating, which makes the air very dry. Some of my tropicals hate the drafty windows, but really need the light. Can you please advise on how to help these unhappy plants?
Having a humidifier in the house.
Humidifier make a difference. You can use a tray where you put the pot on a saucer that has stone on it, so you create an envelope of humidity
around that plant.
But, you know, we got greenhouses, and they're made out of glass, and they're drafty, and the plants are fine.
Okay.
You know, as long as you don't have cold air coming in. We alarm our greenhouses at 55. Plants are okay.
When it hits 55, you go in and...
If it gets below 55, we got to go in and find out why.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay. Right.
Jim writes, when it comes to trying to get new grass to grow, it seems like everyone has their own method. What's exactly the best way to get new grass to grow? When is the best time to seed? Should I wait until it gets hot or should I seed now? And why is it that the pros use straw for growing a new lawn?
Let's let the sod father answer this.
It's
all a simple answer. If you water it, it grows.
Okay.
If you don't water it, it doesn't grow.
What about timing?
You can do it any time you can water. So can you do it when it's 90 degrees? Sure, if you can keep it wet. That's why you use straw, is to keep it wet. That's why you see this blue stuff that they use when they spray it on, to keep it wet. If you don't keep it wet, it doesn't grow.
What is that blue stuff, by the way?
It's a cellulose mixture. Looks like almost like ground up newspaper.
Okay. Yep.
Now, the trick is, when you plant grass seed and it's hot or windy or sunny, if you don't water it three times a day, don't bother. If you can't water it in the middle of the day, when it gets that little green fuzz and just starts to grow, if it dries out one time, it's dead.
That's the key. It's you could be really good with your watering, but one one time.
If you can't do it, don't start.
All right. Pretty tough. Tough love from Bob Graves.
I've been doing this a long time.
All right, sod father.
Sod father has spoken.
Alan in Williamstown writes, great description of growing garlic. When do you pull them out of the ground?
So that's a good one, too. So, you know, I plant them in October, and I pull them out of the ground. You know, you really, it does vary a little bit. It's summer when you're pulling them out, towards like Augusty. But this year, I can tell you exactly when I did it. I pulled it out on July 26th is what I actually did the harvest.
Yeah.
And it isn't so much the exact week or day. It's more the condition of the garlic at that stage of the game. So I look at the garlic plant. It's, you know, cut your scapes off. Again, go in bigger bulbs. Always remove the scapes. And that's going to give you a bigger bulb.
Okay.
And you'll have some great scapes to eat, too. But when you start to see it'll yellow from the bottom. So you'll get one leaf start to yellow, two leaves start to yellow. If you see that third leaf start to yellow, I think that's about perfect timing.
All right. Last email here from Kathy, and then we'll go back to the phones. Kathy says, my peach tree has had peach leaf curl for years. I've started to use copper fungicide, but I didn't get to spray it this fall. Is it too late to treat for the coming year?
Yeah, you want to do that in the spring. You got to do it when the leaves start to come out.
Okay.
Yep. So not too late.
It's, copper's not the only one. Sometimes sulfur, sometimes alternating.
Yep.
When we have a wet spring, if you don't spray for it, you're going to get it.
You're going to get it. But copper sulfate, I know, has worked well.
Yeah.
And it is like you just got to – it's a preventative, so you really got to get it on.
Once you see it, it's too late.
Yeah. You got to just commit to it, and it'll work, you know, unless it's a really crazy year, like Bob said.
All right.
And,
let's go to our phone lines, and Veronica's in Guilderland. Veronica, go ahead.
Hi. We have a house by the pine bush. And we've been trying to just have, like, native species, but our neighbor put in bamboo. It's like this really thin bamboo to get, I guess, like, privacy. But I've noticed that I'm starting to get, shoots of bamboo in the middle of our backyard.
Oh, boy.
What can I do to stop it?
So it's an invasive one. At least some varieties
There's some that are okay. Boy, that's a tough one.
Where he's got it on the edge of your property, the property line, and, kind of a thing.
Yeah, he put it in the backyard, and there's no fence between us. It's just some fire bushes and other type of things.
Yep.
And now it looks like all pale yellow, and it's really thin. It's not like the thick bamboo.
Right, it's more of a grassy
bamboo. Mm-hmm, it's as thick as a finger.
Yep. And I'm assuming it's coming in sort of on the area where it's where he's got it planted, correct?
Well, it's like 5 meters from the plant. Just these shoots came up straight up in the middle of our grass.
Yep. So
and I wonder what it was, and I try to dig it out, like the rhizome or the root.
Yep.
And they're huge.
Yep. They grow on runners. So the only way to really stop it, and there is a way to help this. It's called a root barrier. You actually dig a sort of a trench along your line, you know, close to the bamboo, not on his side of the line. And then and if you look online, you could find these different types of root barriers, but something that's a really hard like plastic would work. I've seen this roll stuff that's it's very, very thick. and you can just kind of cut it to the dimension you want.
How deep do you think they need to go?
If you went 2 feet down,
I would say
you'd probably be pretty good.
6 inches isn't going to
do it. So yeah, good question, Bob. I would say probably 2 feet down, and you put this root barrier down. It's kind of like you're just filling in the trench with soil right after that.
2 feet.
Two feet.
To dig a moat, Veronica.
And that's going to stop those roots from crossing the line. And
now you've already got it in your lawn, so once you do that, you're going to have to get rid of what's in there.
Correct.
Because it's going to keep, it's already there.
Yep, and you can get rid of it just once you put the root barrier in. There's no sense that, and then you're going to get, be persistent, keep right on it, and if you have that area, sort of blocked up, I think, you'd win the battle. It's going to be a little bit of work, but if you don't do anything, that area, it's already showing that it tends to be a little bit on the invasive side, if not more. It's one of those varieties. So, that would be what I would recommend. It's worked for, they use those root barriers even to stop, like, trees from infiltrating, like, leach fields. They use root barriers to stop trees' roots from growing into retaining walls or into foundations. So from an arboriculture standpoint, it's used to stop tree roots. And I like to say, if you can stop a tree root, you can probably stop a bamboo
root. Okay. All right, let's go to Miller's Falls, and it's Arthur's turn. Arthur, you're on.
Hello.
Hello.
Yeah, I was listening earlier, and he had one of the guys had mentioned the name of a garlic, and he was saying how good it was.
Yeah.
Yep.
That he was growing.
Absolutely.
That's what I would like to know.
Yep. So the variety that I grow this variety, I grow a few varieties. But my number one variety is called Music. It's
Munich?
It's, nope, like music. Like I like to play music. Music.
Oh, okay.
Yep, yep. And that variety is not only just and again, I'm an Italian guy, so I grew up with garlic. My dad and mom weaned me on garlic. So these are huge bulbs. It's not too hot. It's got a real good garlic flavor. And that variety just tends to want to make big bulbs. I was telling Ray, I don't know if I was on air or off air. I think I was off air, but people have actually looked at some of the bigger cloves that I've got from some of these bulbs, and they've actually thought it was elephant garlic, and it definitely wasn't. It's just a really big, really big, well-grown clove. But you're gonna love that variety. I recommend it highly.
Thanks, Arthur. Appreciate the call. To Columbia County we go. Jennifer, you're on the gardening show. Hello.
Hey, I wanted to get your recommendations on what evergreens to plant this year. In the past, we've done hemlock, and I love Norway spruce, but I've heard that they're not really recommended anymore with, global warming and bugs and diseases and blue spruce with the needle cast and someone recommended maybe red cedar or white cedar, arborvitae, but I wanted to get your opinion on what you're recommending now and what you're saying, maybe avoid these evergreens.
It's a really good question because there are fewer and fewer things that we have to plant.
Yeah.
The Colorados are the ones that are most susceptible to the needle cast. Norway's not so much. We haven't had a lot of trouble with Norway's.
Norway's still kind of good.
So
yep,
Serbians maybe would be Serbian spruce be a possibility.
Yep, white spruce also still pretty good.
Yep, spruce. The red cedar, which is juniper, can have some issues, but not many. Hemlocks, the primary concern is the hemlock adelgid, woolly hemlock adelgid, which in a residential setting is quite controllable.
It is. It's more in the forest.
It's more in a forest that it's a problem. So I wouldn't necessarily shy away from hemlock. White pine, as long as it's not in an area where it's going to get road salt. But white pine does really well around here, too.
Yep, and it does get big white pine, but they have a lot of different cultivars. So if you were looking for something that was a little smaller... Yeah. Just research the variety, the height and the cultivar that
gets the white cedar is arborvitae, and as long as you don't have deer, if you have deer, you want to go to certain types of arborvitae. But if you've got, there's some types of arborvitae the deer will just destroy.
Yeah.
Deer are like that.
Yeah, but if you don't have a deer problem,
relatively inexpensive.
I imagine she has a deer problem in Columbia County. You have deer over there, Jennifer?
Oh, yes, we do.
They got a lot of deer.
Yeah, they sure do.
The Western arborvitae is resistant to deer. So, that's another variety.
And the green giant is one of the ones that's in the West. It's a Western variety.
Yep.
Okay. All right, Jennifer, you want to follow up very quickly?
We are up against one of the state DEC parks, so we do have a lot of bugs. Would that give you any, you know, narrowing in on anything from that, what you've recommended?
No, it's, you know, we consider these bugs everywhere, you know, whether you're on state land or whether you're on a residential area.
Yeah.
So the plants that we're recommending there are right now more or less the ones that are the least problematic.
If there's an insect anywhere, it's everywhere.
It's everywhere, yeah.
All right, Jennifer, thanks a lot. We'll go to Plainfield. Carrie, you're on.
Yes, good afternoon. Earlier you had mentioned about getting garden soil analyzed, and my question is, this past fall I purchased 8 yards of premium garden soil from a reputable garden center. And I was wondering, you know, I have raised beds, and when I put that soil in this year, do you think it has to be fertilized or amended in any way, or is it okay just the way that soil is?
You're going to amend anything you use. You're going to test it.
Yep.
I would be willing to bet in everything I've got that your pH is off. Even if you buy really good soil, really reputable soil, even soil that the state has said is good, the pH is probably going to be high.
It's going to need probably some kind of adjustment. I you know, can back that up. I've got, you know, years ago we bought a really big load of some really, really good compost from a guy that no longer is in business, but he was older guy, retired, and he really put his heart and a lot of pride into making this compost. It was all vegetable compost and really rich. And I've grown amazing gardens using this product. But when we tested it, when we got it, it had a pH of about 4.0. And that's pretty acidic. Now, our soil at our home was about 7.2 pH. Mm. So when you put those two together, it ended up in a real nice sweet spot for us.
What we normally see is something in the 7.8 range, which is way high usually.
Mm. Right. So really, really alkaline.
You need to check it because you don't have any idea.
Yep. And I would take that to the local cooperative extension. Again, have them send it out to Cornell University, ask for a complete fertility test, and label the crops you want to grow. It's going to come back with a complete analysis, and then you're going to be able to adjust that scientifically. Otherwise, it's a mad science, and you know, you're guessing, and you're not going to get those results unless that pH is in the
sweet
spot. Anybody
that tells you they can look at it and see what the pH is lying to you.
That's correct.
Hey, Carrie, you're getting a terrible rumble, low-end rumble on your line, so we're going to let you go there, and maybe next time we'll have a better connection, but thank you for the call. This email from Chris in Saratoga Springs. We have a large apple tree that is 36 years old and still growing. A large trunk has grown into our neighbor's airspace. Can I cut that trunk without killing the tree? What time of year could I safely do this?
So I wouldn't try to not remove the large portion of the trunk, because when you do that, there's, you know, we don't have enough time to give you all the reasons of why that's not good.
Yeah.
But it's generally saying it's not good. So what we would want to do is a reduction cut. So look at the ends where it's growing into the neighbor's airspace and look for some lower limbs that are maybe growing pointing towards your direction, and we want to cut those guys back to those limbs that are growing in the right direction. It's better to do a reduction cut than to do the main trunk removal in this case, because it's an old tree. The cut that you're going to take and make on that large section is never going to close. Trees don't heal. They either seal or they don't seal. And in this case, it wouldn't seal. And that would facilitate rot into the trunk. And it sort of ends sometimes a declining state after a large tree.
Timing-wise, he's pretty good, though.
Yeah, timing-wise.
Now we're getting there to the time to trim fruit trees.
We are. We're definitely getting there. Right. You know, end of winter, early spring is a good time to get out there. And wouldn't be too early if you did it now.
Right.
But
wait
to the end of the month, probably most for key timing.
Linda writes in, scapes. Do you cut them or pull them off?
So that's another one of those things. And some people say pull them. Some people say cut them. I don't like to pull them because I've seen that it can damage the actual plant a little bit if it doesn't come out just right.
Yeah.
And so I just get very carefully. I use a little tiny, very sharp pair of scissors for this. Go in there and clip those guys right at the point from which they grow. And that's what I've done every year. And you want to wait. There's a timing on escape too, so I wait for it to make a full curl. If it goes too many curls, you've waited too long, and now it's taking energy from the bulb. If you go too soon, it's going to want to. It's a little too quick, and hey, you don't get as much pesto.
All right.
So wait for one coil.
All right. Now there's Mr. Basie. So we're wrapping it up here. Bob Graves, how do people find Fatigan's?
We're on the Troy Schenectady Road, about 2.5 miles west of the Northway, just past the road that goes to the Albany Airport.
Uh-huh. Does the airplanes annoy you?
You get used to it.
Yeah.
But you know, they used to be a lot louder.
They're
They're much quieter now than they were.
Oh, yeah. Those turbo props were fun, weren't they?
You know, every now and then there'll be a military one that goes over. Boy, does that startle you.
Oh, boy.
Yeah, those guys are loud.
Fred, wow. How do people find the Landis Arboretum?
So we're at 174 Lape Road in Esperance, New York, and landisarboretum.org.
Gentlemen, thanks for braving the conditions and being here today. Support comes from Hyatt Place, Albany, actively seeking qualified candidates for positions in engineering, housekeeping, and front desk. Complete benefits online at heihotels.com/careers or in-person applications accepted. Once again, thanks to Fred Breglia and Bob Graves for being here today. Thanks for the calls and the emails. Sorry if we didn't get to yours. Thanks to Zach Malloy, our engineer. Susie Checkeye screened the calls. I'm Ray Graff. Tomorrow on Food Friday, we welcome back the kitchen shrink, Tamar Adler. We'll talk about finding happiness in the kitchen. I'm lucky if I can find the kitchen. We'll see you tomorrow at 2:00.